You know Salahuddin as the liberator of Masjid Aqsa. The largest Muslim country today, the largest Muslim Arab country today, if it wasn't for Salahuddin, may have been Shia today. For 200 years, Egypt was Shia. Al-Azhar, your oldest Islamic university, was Shia until Salahuddin came. You know Salahuddin, just as a liberator of Masjid Aqsa, this was their Salahuddin.
When Najmuddin Ayyub, the father of Salahuddin, reunited with his son in Cairo in 565 Hijri, he came bearing a letter from Nuruddin Zanki containing instructions that Salahuddin hasten to wipe out the Fatimid Shia state and ensure that Jum'ah khutbahs are delivered in the name of the Sunni Abbasid Khalif. Salahuddin was initially hesitant to act so swiftly, but Nuruddin was resolute. He regarded the conquest of Egypt as a blessing from Allah upon the Ummah, presenting the ideal opportunity to unite the Muslim world upon the way of the Ahlus Sunnah and rid it of the scourge of Shiism. Salahuddin complied, but in doing so, he was faced with the task of dismantling a deep-seated legacy of two centuries of Shiism in Egypt. The Rafidi Fatimid state was established in the year 909 in North Africa by Ubaidullah al-Mahdi. Its adherents were known by a plethora of names, including Ismailis, based on the offshoot of Shiism from which they emerged. They were also called Ubaidis, Fatinis, and Fatimis. They falsely claimed to be the descendants of Sayyidina Ali and Fatima radiallahu anha. When Ubaidullah entered Tunis, his Shiism became apparent, and he openly reviled the majority of the Sahaba and the blessed wives of the Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, claiming that they had apostatized after the demise of the Messenger. Conditions for the Ahlus Sunnah became dire, and it became common practice to openly slander the Sahaba in the marketplaces. Heads of rams and donkeys were hung up at the doors of shops, with pieces of paper attached to them, bearing the names of various Sahaba. Exaggerated claims were made about Ubaidullah al-Mahdi, with some even attributing to him divinity and knowledge of the unseen. His location was considered to be the Qibla, and prayers would be offered and amended to the direction of his presence. The masses in the affected areas were coerced to accept this aqidah, and thousands were imprisoned and tortured for refusing to do so. The issuing of fatawa, according to the madhab of Imam Malik, the predominant madhab in the region, was banned. Dead bodies were paraded in the marketplaces as a means of warning of the consequences of issuing fatawa according to anything but their brand of Shiism. Tarawih was abolished, and the unproven words, Hayya ala khayril amal, meaning come to the best deed, were added to the Adhan. The consequences of Muazzins not doing so were dire. A Muazzin who refused to add in this innovated phrase had his tongue cut out and placed between his eyes. He was paraded around Qayrawan and then killed. Public gatherings were banned. Libraries of Sunni books were destroyed or confiscated, and Sunni ulama were banned from convening Islamic lessons. Ubaidullah would tell his followers that all obligations such as salah and sawm were waived, and all prohibitions such as adultery and drinking alcohol had become permissible. Muslims were forced to break their fast in Ramadan before the moon was sighted, and those who objected were killed. Ubaidullah would bring his horses into Masajid, and when objections were raised, he would defend his actions, claiming that the dung and urine of these horses were pure as they belonged to him. Before the founder of the state died, he suffered an appalling fate. Worms appeared at the end of his behind and began consuming his intestines. This condition worsened until he died. Sunni ulama of the time led several waves of resistance against the emergence of this Shia entity. They would boycott officials and scholars who aligned themselves with the system. Many public debates were held, wherein flawed Shia beliefs were exposed. Several books were written, some to clarify the authentic aqidah of the Ahlus Sunnah and the status of the Sahaba, and others to directly refute the Shia and their beliefs. Some ulama took the resistance further, declaring jihad on the Ubaidis and considering their presence a greater threat than that of external enemies. Battles were even fought, wherein the Ubaidis were defeated. The fierce resistance in this region promoted the Ubaidis to seek greener pastures in Egypt, and in 358 Hijri, they succeeded in annexing Egypt under the command of Johar As-Siqli. As-Siqli constructed Al-Azhar, which began as a seminary for promoting the ideology of this Shia sect. The Fatimid state soon died in Africa. The Maliki Madhab was restored as the official jurisprudence, and symbols and authority of the Abbasid Khilafah were reasserted. However, the Fatimids were to grow in prestige in Egypt and eventually expanded their reach to include Sham, the Hijaz, and even the Abbasid capital, Baghdad, for a while. The depravity of their ideology was soon to become apparent in Egypt. The Islamic law of inheritance was amended. Taraweeh was banned by royal edict. People found in possession of the Muwatta of Imam Malik were punished. Worshippers were tortured for performing Salatul Duha. Certain vegetables were banned because Sayyidina Muawiyah and Sayyida Aisha radiallahu anha were reported to have been fond of these. Signboards with curses of the Sahaba were displayed prominently on the walls of masjids and public buildings. The Fatimids would raise children of a tender age to the throne. Some of their leaders were crowned when they were as young as 5 years old. When a four-year-old heir to the throne once rode through the bazaars of Cairo, people prostrated before him. Muhammad Ali Sallabi writes of the characteristics of the Shia observed through history. They appear humble, pretend to be pitiful, and act friendly when they are weak. But when they feel strong, they use the worst kinds of tyranny, force, and vengeance.
Who had betrayed Sayyidina Hussein radiallahu an, the general Shia fraternity in Iraq, as well as mainly Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, Rafidi Shi'i. Number two, who had betrayed the Abbasid Khilafah, Radhi Billah, it was Al-Bahyun, Rafidi Shi'i. Who enabled the Tatars to enter Baghdad? It was Ibn al-Alqami, again Rafidi Shi'i.
The Fatimid state would eventually last for a little more than 280 years, spanning 14 kings in total. They were the wealthiest of leaders, but also the most tyrannical and oppressive, and worst in conduct. Countless innovations and evils appeared during their rule. The numbers of evil people proliferated, and the influence of the righteous and scholars declined. The treacherous assassins would appear in their time, and the greatest tragedy to befall Muslim lands under the banner of the Crusades would transpire under their watch. The age of Fatimid rule was indeed a scourge and a source of degradation for Islam. It now weighed heavily upon the shoulders of Salahuddin al-Ayyubi to undo this disastrous legacy.